Good evening. My name's Aaron Colazar, and I'm from Prince Edward Island. I'm over for to watch the trial this week, seeing as I'm similarly charged and will be faced. My trial was adjourned till July. That's the G7 trial Chris was speaking about earlier. Glad to be here. Glad everyone could come. And I guess just want to start out by talking a little bit about Seattle, the protests against the World Trade Organization in Seattle. Okay, so I went down to Seattle with a bunch of people from across the country, went across on the train. There was about 20 largely young people, and we got down to Seattle. And it was just everything about the atmosphere, well, maybe not everything, I guess there was a bunch of police there, but much about the atmosphere was pretty amazing and really impacted on me. And then throughout the collective action on those days in the streets, people shut down the World Trade Organization meeting on the first day, and maybe about 200 of the 3,000 delegates were able to get in. And they weren't able to have their meetings on the first day. And that was quite a victory. Then later that afternoon, the police declared martial law, well, maybe a state of emergency, basically the same thing, called in the army and imposed a curfew and imposed a no protest zone for the following day and for the week. So the next, but the way during that day, the way people put their bodies on the line, blockaded, it was largely focused around blockading each possible entranceway, and there was thousands of people doing blockades, whether it was with people locking themselves to each other or dumpsters or other objects, or whether it was just a large street party occupying the space. The next day, people marched downtown, and even though there was this curfew and no protest zone, people decided they wanted to challenge that, believed that they still had a right to have freedom of speech, maybe, or something like that, despite the fact that it was forbidden within this zone. A bunch of people got arrested. There was about 200 of us arrested in the place that was, prior to the state of emergency being declared, the official designated protest zone, Westlake Plaza. And so there was about 200 of us just arbitrarily arrested there. Some of the people, they had said, well, if you don't want to be arrested, just leave. They went to leave, and when they tried to go through the police lines, they were arrested. It really showed me brutally, clearly, how police can and do react. They said, we're not going to arrest anyone on the first day. They said, we're just going to use pain and chemical compliance on you. They proceeded to pepper spray, tear gas, and beat thousands of people who were doing nothing violent and damaging no property. The window breaking we hear so much about happened hours after the tear gas and police violence had been started. I don't need to go on more there, but I just wanted to mention it because it was a real awakening for me, and it started something where I have gone to a number of these summits, mass protests, and I've had a lot of empowerment and seen a lot of empowerment at these events and in the resistance to it and the way people work together and organize together, decentralized. And how thousands of people I saw in Seattle and at other places since have been inspired to take it back to their communities and really committed themselves to working for change. Since Seattle, I've seen multiple protests. I've seen increased militarization. In Quebec, we witnessed a 10-foot-high chain link fence. And these sorts of things are becoming more and more prominent, more and more police in riot gear. Guns, tear gas, chemical weapons, dogs, and so on and so on. It seems to be increasing. As well as has been mentioned before, the intimidation, the visits to people's homes, to organizers, targeting of organizers, and the way police will sometimes, and I've witnessed and experienced police, giving people personal information about themselves that they would only know through, what I don't know what means, but how, you wouldn't think they'd know. Just to let people know that they know or can know, just to make you feel insecure about them. And I think that, well, okay, I'll go back to PEI now, where I'm from, Prince Edward Island, something that's just occurred recently in the media. You might have heard about some local fishers that had a protest and a blockade because large multinational, they're based in Newfoundland. I guess I couldn't say for sure whether they're multinational or not, but they're really big companies. The Barry Group owns most of these seiners. They're really big boats that catch about as much in one trip as a small fisher might catch in a year, if that. maybe 10 tractor trailer loads, somewhere in that ballpark, in one of fish in one boat. So the fishers in PEI saw these big seiners coming into their waters and taking all of their fish, as well as destroying the ecosystem and the habitat because the nets are non-selective. So they, over a period of a few years, they've been protesting and raising concerns, and it hasn't done anything, and it's been been going on and on. So they made a stand, they blockaded the seiners from unloading their catch, and there was a number of standoffs, a number of blockades. Company went and got an injunction. Then they ended up blocking them at the school where the tractor trailers were parked before going to load. But anyway, in the end, they sort of came to an agreement, provincial government, to back down on it, for now, anyway. I think they were partly concerned about saving face. They were portrayed by the police as violent and dangerous and causing trouble, which they were not at all. They were even accused of threatening local businesses to not provide support to the police and this sort of thing. So there was a lot of fear-mongering and scare tactics that some of us have experienced as well in other political or protest movements. But the support, the numbers that were there in a place like PEI that is not well known for having a lot of people that protest or speak out. It's a small place, 140,000 people, where everyone knows everyone, and you don't want to rock the boat because you might not get a job or your kids might not get a job anyway. So, but the numbers of people that came out here and were behind these fisher people was amazing. I had police visit me after the G7 arrests. Well, actually before, but I wasn't around home. They talked to a friend and were asking all about who's going to the G7 protests in Halifax. Is Aaron Colasar going? Who's going? After I returned and I had been arrested and had conditions, they came to pay me a visit to make sure I wasn't going off to Alberta, to Kananaskis, or to Ottawa for any of the G8 protests that were happening. Anyway, just an example of the conditions a lot of people have it worse, but I've had conditions since my arrest, release conditions, to not travel, basically, to not leave the Maritimes unless it's to visit my family in Ontario or to travel as an invited speaker to an environmental conference or teach-in. But as well as I've been ordered not to participate in any protests. So this has been over the past year and a half anyway, so I haven't been able to been involved in any of these anti-war protests, which is a cause I feel strongly about. I was still able to do things, but I was largely hampered from what I otherwise might like to do. And other people have had more extreme conditions, like non-association conditions. There's Chris Arsenault, who spoke earlier. We have to be really careful not to be in the same place because he's not allowed to associate with me. They could charge him with breach of an undertaking. I'm going in to see his trial, and I have to be careful when people are going to get lunch. You know, I don't want to get too close to him because I don't want to give them an excuse to arrest him again. So I think that, you know, context. We need to look at the context of this. I mean, partially it's about control. Partially it's about people not respecting police's authority and following their orders when they say it. And these sorts of things sometimes cause a further reaction or lead to give them an excuse for a further reaction. I think partly they're scared. Partly they're governed by suspicion. They're trained to be suspicious in their courses, as well as trained to deceive. Deception is as well, but trained to be suspicious, trained to be prepared for a gun behind every door. And it seems to me, my experience is they view a protest as potentially violent, all of the people there as potentially violent, maybe more than potentially, maybe planning, plotting. And I think they really don't understand. A lot of them, it seems to me, at least the people in charge, don't understand it. And it seems that causes a need to create these conspiracy theories that they have. Like today, the Crown was trying to advance the case that Chris and myself were getting together and having huddles. Chris was directing the crowd. Other people were getting together with us, and we were ordering people what to do. And I think that they're so embedded within this hierarchical authority structure that, and what they're told about protests is by higher ups largely, or the media, and it's so superficial that they need to somehow logically compartmentalize it, and this is how they understand it, and at least that's how it appears. I think what can we do about it? I think we really need to be aware of this criminalization of dissent and make others aware, to do what we can to protect ourselves from it, yes, and others. We also need to support others in need, people that are being targeted, and I think that extends to not just people that are being targeted for their political beliefs, for protesting, but there's a lot of people out there that, because of the circumstances in our world, do need support. You know, they might not be arrested because they're out protesting, but they might be arrested because of their circumstances, and that those circumstances can't be allowed to continue. So I think we need to resist this criminalization of dissent and continue our dissent and our support work for others, and to that we are creative and unpredictable, and we need to focus on those aspects and not just fall into the same traps they've set for us. And yeah, I think there won't be any security as long as people in the world are, as long as there's a poorly distributed resources, as long as there's inequality and injustice. And I think there's a lot of people, and it seems more and more people that are realizing that and standing up. Thanks. To clarify, that's standing up more so here in the North, in marginalized communities and around the world. People have been standing up for a long time in certain segments in the northern world.